Welcome, everybody, to today's board meeting. It's so great to have, everybody there in person. Apologies that I'm not there in the room. But a big thanks to Ben and Larry and the team for setting this up into a virtual, to allow virtual participation into the meeting. And a big thanks to Senator Stevenson for being there in person, along with the Inland Port Board staff. So we are going to go ahead and get started. It's important to note that the anchor location for this meeting is the Commission Chambers in the Juab County Administration Building. I'm grateful to everybody there that's facilitated this as well for hosting this board meeting. We're holding the meeting here to focus on Juab County as the board today considers the creation of the Central Utah Agri-Park Inland Port Project area. We thank everybody again for being here. This type of participation, and it's a bit of a challenge for us voluntary board members to be in person on these board meetings, but I'm grateful to the Inland Port team for getting out into communities because it enables us to get participation, to get input from our partners across the state. Last month, we were up in Brigham City, today in Juab. We've held board meetings in multiple places in southern Utah, elsewhere in northern Utah, and it's a critical process in order to make sure that we as an entity are focused on maximizing the value we can create for the state and the different communities and doing it in very close partnership. And so again, thank you to our hosts and for everybody for being there. Our agenda today includes an executive director report, a presentation on the development of the UEPA statewide logistics strategy, one board policy, the introduction of the Mineral Mountains Inland Port Project area in Beaver County, and consideration to approve the Central Utah Agri-Park Inland Port Project area. The Utah Inland Port Authority and local community leaders anticipate this project will pay off in regional economic growth and opportunity for many years to come. As you can see, we've got a packed agenda. The team always does a great job of trying to dial us in on timing. We're aiming to have a public comment period to begin at about 3:10 p.m., and we look forward to the public comment on what we're doing here in Juab County, what we're considering down in Beaver County, and of course, what we're doing across the state. For those of you in attendance in person, in order to speak during public comment, please fill out a comment card and hand it to Diana, and she will number it according to the order she receives. I assume that Diana is there in the room raising her hand, and so please get your comment cards in there. We will accept comment cards up until the start of the comment period. All public comments will be no more than 2 minutes in length. And because our agenda is packed, we are going to ask people to make sure to stick to that 2 minutes. And there's a pretty good chance we won't get to everybody today in the public comment period. But please submit your comments in writing at inlandportauthority.utah.gov. The team does a great job of taking those in, passing them along to the board as appropriate, and then making sure that we're getting back to the members of the public. And so that written comment is very, very helpful to us on the board. So let's go ahead and jump into the agenda. We're going to hold on approval of the minutes until we get Ryan Starks will be joining us here momentarily. And so let's go straight into the executive director report. Ben, I'll go ahead and turn the time over to you.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Hopefully everyone can hear me okay. It is great to be with you, and it's great to be in Juab County. We've been looking forward to this meeting for a long time. We feel like this is one of those counties that is just naturally set up for an inland port project area. We're excited for our next opportunity to be in Beaver County as well, which, again, we feel like sets up very well as we continue this, our core mission, which is how do we empower regional economies and also create a better logistics system, creating more opportunities to take trucks off the road, put things on rail, and overall create economic empowerment through logistics and through local synergy with the Inland Port. So we're ecstatic for this meeting. I will say I love Juab County a lot, not just because it's beautiful. This is where my wife's family is from. So I think her family fills up like half of the cemetery, the Nephi Cemetery. So it's almost like coming home, but maybe it's coming home to my in-laws a little bit as well. But it's a pleasure to be here. We've been coming to this community for years and years, as our family. And so it does feel like home, and we always find great people here and people who are very interested in their community, very interested in trying to do what's right. Not only by their constituencies, but also understand the importance and the impact of their choices and decisions, which is partly what we're here to do today. So I've got three items that I'm going to cover. First, I want to introduce new staff. I'll talk a little bit about the strategic business plan. And then I do want to address our interlocal agreement with Salt Lake City. We signed that about a year ago, so I'll just give a very quick update on that and the status of that initiative. So first, let me just say thank you. We are excited to have a few new faces join the Utah Inland Port Authority team. I first want to say thank you to Danny Stewart for joining our team. You're going to hear a lot from Danny today. Danny is being thrown into the fire, good, bad, or indifferent, and actually will lead out on some of the project areas as these will be kind of in his area. Danny brings a wealth of experience in terms of economic development and working with local stakeholders. He's had a lot of big project wins in the state. He's also had good experience working with our project down there, BZI, Rail, Union Pacific, and others. And so he is a tremendous asset and a tremendous personality in northern or southern Utah. So we're ecstatic to have him join our team. We have no doubt that he'll make a very positive impact. So thank you, Danny. We also want to say,
you're probably on top of that.
You are more so than I am. But definitely recognize Senator Owens being with us today as well. And so we'll have a chance to hear from him a little bit later on our panel as well. So thank you, Senator, for being here. And also thank you to the commissioners that are here. I know we've got several in this area. I won't give call outs because I can't see everybody. I'm not sure who's here and who's not. But thank you to the commissioners that have made a drive to be here as well. Larry, I think we need another seat here as well. I just saw Mr. Wyatt walk into the back of the room. So one of our other, and I'll just mention this, we do have a new board member that will be joining. The board has been very thoughtful about who should join our board. And so we will have a new board member coming online. How about now? come on up, Bill. So we are ecstatic to have Bill Wyatt joining the Inland Port Authority Board. And so we will do swearing in at a time appropriate and make sure that he gets a chance to get acquainted with all of our good works. But thank you for being here, Bill.
You bet.
We so appreciate it.
Love admiring UDOT's good work. So
we have a chance.
The ongoing part. Yeah.
It's probably worth noting, if I were a betting man, I would say there might be a little bit of board turnover and board shuffling over the next couple of meetings. But we're ecstatic to have Bill join the board and represent that we have an opportunity to really create some tremendous partnerships. Bill, first meeting, do you want to make any comments? I know I'm putting you on the spot a little bit.
No problem. Used to it. Grateful to be here. I drive by here every weekend, so I'm very familiar with Nephi. Very happy to be a part of the board. We're neighbors. Salt Lake City Department of Airports is obviously a significant neighbor of the Inland Port Authority. In my background, before I came to Salt Lake to be involved in the airport, I grew up, I was born and raised in Oregon, and I was executive director of the Port of Portland, which is a deep water port authority, but also owns Portland International Airport and uniquely two others, just like Salt Lake. So I have some familiarity with port business, a lot of experience with rail, and obviously ocean cargo as well. So it's a matter of considerable interest, and I've seen really the positive benefits that the port business can bring to communities and to the state, and I'm really happy to be a part of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Our board was unanimous.
I'm sorry, is he a new voting member?
Ex officio.
Non-voting.
He's a non, there's still two vacant non-voting.
Yes.
Right. Awesome, thank you. Sorry.
So Bill will be one of our non-voting members, an ex officio member. And so our board felt strongly that we wanted representation from not just rail, but also air, and also with good port background, and also Salt Lake City representation as well. And Bill checks every box and then quite a few more. So we're ecstatic to have him on our board and all that he brings. I also want to introduce Caitlin Felstead. So Caitlin will be taking over as our new communications director. So previously that position was held by Tanisa Wright, and Tanisa left our organization a couple of months ago. And so we've been trying to find the right person. Caitlin was previously with the Department of Corrections. And prior to that, I got a chance to work with her when she was working at the STEM Action Center, which was housed within the Governor's Office of Economic Development. And so she brings a wealth of experience to this position. So we're really fortunate to have Caitlin. So thank you, Caitlin, for coming on board as well. And so with that, thank you to everybody who's joining the Inland Port team. We feel like we're becoming not only stronger, but more transparent and really creating opportunities for better interface with the public. And also, as we spread across the state, we want to make sure that people have an awareness of what our strategic business plan really is. So let me just say, our course from here, we will next be in Beaver County next month, creating the Beaver County project area. I want to say Mineral Mountain project area. And so we are ecstatic to be down in Beaver County and Milford City next month. We'll be in conjunction with the One Utah Summit down there. And so we'll have some to-dos involved with that. Following that in October, we will then go to Tooele, where we're looking at the project area for Tooele. We anticipate that that project area will be available, obviously, 10 days before our next board meeting in Milford City. And then following Tooele, we will be in West Weber County. Those are the communities to date that have adopted resolutions. People have asked, are we just going to keep expanding and expanding and expanding? No, we're not. So there are some people who believe that we will, but we are going to be very, very prescriptive or very, very deliberate about the project areas that we bring on after West Weber County. We feel like there had been really good conversations and dialogue between the Inland Port and several communities, but what we're looking for in these project areas in these communities, one, communities that have a good, strong rail presence where we really can create a regional infrastructure play, and also communities that want us there, which is critical to all of this, but where we can really engage and make a positive economic difference and also logistically as well. So as we look at this, I want to just highlight one of the really cool experiences we had over the last month. We had a chance to be down in Cedar City with Governor Cox and other state leaders. As we saw kind of what is our first official rail terminal coming into existence. And so I want to give Danny Stewart a lot of credit for his good work, our team for a lot of work putting that project area together. Obviously, we did a project area and also an infrastructure bank loan. But what we saw there was really cool, and it's exactly emblematic of what we want to do, which is there is a company now, BZI Steel, that is going to be able to bring steel right to their front door. So instead of having to send it to the Northwest quadrant of Salt Lake City and then put it on a truck to bring down to their facility, they now are able to bring that steel right to their front door. So as we talk about our mission in terms of streamlining Utah's transportation system, we're looking at the same thing here in Nephi as well. What can we do in terms of putting some of that rail cargo on the rail as opposed to putting it on the road? We're going to have tremendous opportunities in Beaver County as well. So all of these places, we're just starting to chip away at having to send everything into the Wasatch Front on truck. We want to be able to create opportunity here in these communities. So as we look at our strategic plans, we're really going to become more focused on the logistics side of this. Alan will touch on this a little bit today, but it's not just about the economic. It's about the logistics and the economics working together. So that's part of our core mission. That's what the Inland Port is all about. So that is something we'll definitely be highlighting. We also want to look at where there are opportunities to put more on air as opposed to truck as well. So I won't go in too much into detail because I think conversations are still early, but if we can do a better job putting things on air as opposed to putting them on road, it creates more economic opportunity in those regions, but also we feel like we're taking trucks off the road, which is a good, worthwhile cause. And so as we get into our strategic business plan, we probably will have some updates over the next couple of months. I will also note we probably will have an update for the Salt Lake City, the Northwest Quadrant business plan, as our conversations and our negotiations related to the landfill site continue forward. As things start to settle down, we will make public any of those conversations and strategic directions that are critical to that. Lastly, on that note, I'll just mention something that's kind of related. Interlocal agreement with Salt Lake City. Last year, we signed an agreement with Salt Lake City. Part of that included a health impact assessment along with a community and traffic impact assessment as well. So we still have every intention of doing that. We have an RFP that we have been developing out for those studies. We've been working with Salt Lake City on that. We are in agreement with Salt Lake City that we do not want to rush those studies before we have a very good template to make sure they get done right. So we are going to take the time to make sure that they do get done right, as opposed to trying to move quickly. And I know there will be a push to say, you know, just get them out. Let's just try and get a contractor or vendor working on this. We feel like we want something that is very value add for the community, has the right tracking, creates the right baseline for all of the right indicators that we're looking to track. We want to make sure that we're doing that in alignment with our partners at Salt Lake City, and they are in alignment on this as well. So we're not going to rush some of those studies related to the Salt Lake City interlocal agreement. I know there's been some questions on that, but for those who just want us to do it, we would just respond, just please be patient with us. We want to make sure those get done right, as opposed to being done quick. So I just mentioned those things. Those are things that have certainly been percolating kind of in the public sphere. So if there are questions on any of those items, please reach out to our staff. We're happy to go through and walk you through what those entail. But with that, Mr. Chair, I think we're ready to go forward with the rest of our agenda.
Great, Ben. Thank you very much for that. Before I share a couple comments about some of these staff and board changes, Senator Stevenson or Bill, do you have any questions or comments?
I have none at this point in time. I understand very intimately how close or how this is working and what we're doing. And I think we've got a great staff that's moving us forward at the right pace. Yeah, nothing here.
Thank you, Bill. The one comment I'll have on this is, you know, as we set out as a new board 15 or 16 months ago, a lot of great work had happened for the prior years up to that point. And we thought deeply as a new board, how do we get the right structure in place, the right management team, and then how do we build out the board of directors, because there are some vacant spots on the non-voting board members, as well as a team with great expertise. Of course, hiring Ben and Ben Byes and others on the team, empowering Amy, those were all steps along that path. But, you know, Bill, in our very first meeting, as we thought about who we should have on the board, your name was at the top of the list. And we wanted to make sure that we had enough of the structural work done in order to make sure that we could capitalize on your expertise, both running a port as well as an airport. Now everything you're doing in Portland and now everything you're doing in Salt Lake. I think it's worth sharing with the audience today that when I first moved to Utah over 5 years ago, there was Steve Price hosted a lunch, at which point I met Bill for the first time. And Steve introduced Bill as the smartest guy in Utah. And so that is definitely borne out to be true over the past few years. There are a lot of women that are smarter, but at least among the guys, Bill is the smartest one out there. And so, Bill, we're grateful for your willingness to roll up your sleeves. Obviously, all of your port experience can be value-added, but particularly on that point that Ben mentioned in terms of air cargo, that is something that has tremendous potential opportunity in the state and that we want to be really, really plugged in and synced up with the international airport and potentially other airports across the state. And Danny and Caitlin, so great to have you on the team as well. Also had a chance to interact with Caitlin when she's at the STEM Action Center. And then Danny, lots of So hey, kudos, Ben, for the great work that you're doing to building a great team, and grateful to everybody for their willingness to roll up their sleeves and join us in this great work that we're doing across the state. So with that, let's go ahead and move on to Alan Evans, who is UEPA Executive Vice President for Business Development. And he's going to go ahead and update the board on the development of the port statewide logistics strategy. Alan had this presentation teed up when we were in Brigham City a few weeks ago. We ran out of time. And so, Alan, really grateful for the work that you're doing on this component of the port and look forward to your presentation.
Great. Thank you. Trying to sit over here so maybe I can carry more to the room. Just as we think and talk about logistics, you know, logistics is a network of companies that move freight and goods around the country and the world. And you, as I think about logistics, there's really three areas or three components that need to be present for us to, let's see if I can get rid of that. For us, when it comes to logistics, and those really are infrastructure, capacity, and goods. So the infrastructure, that's really how we access the logistics network. The capacity is how much we can put through the network, and the goods are what's traveling through the network. And so on the infrastructure side, you know, that's where a lot of the capital intensive spend is. And usually companies can't afford to create the infrastructure on their own, or individually. Capacity, you know, is really where we talk about where the pricing comes. It keeps our business competitive. So, and then the, when it comes to our goods, that's of course, you know, the stuff that we manufacture in Utah, the stuff, the raw product we bring in, the finished goods we send out. So if you think on infrastructure, you know, think about yards, airports, the roads, any facilities that we need to do. The capacity is really driven by those transportation partners, the railroads, the airlines, the ocean carriers, et cetera. And then, you know, our goods are driven by our manufacturers, our defense industry, and importers and exporters, and some of those. So, you know, I think a good example is probably one that we've all dealt with is, you know, air travel. And in that case, you know, the infrastructure would be the airport. That's how we get on and off the airplanes. Capacity would be the number of flights that are going someplace. And then we're the goods, right? And I think we all know when there's a lot of flights going to a market, the prices come down. When there's just one, the prices go up. And it's the same thing true with cargo. But as we have all three of these things, we get what I would like to say, we kind of get this logistics sweet spot. And the reality is not always do you find locations where you have all three things that exist, right? So in some cases, you're going to have capacity and you're going to have goods. So when that happens, you're going to have higher costs. You're going to have capital investment that's required that's very prohibitive and a large dependency on trucks because people are having to truck to where they can get their goods because there's no access to the logistics network. I think a good example of this happened in a neighboring state where all of their agricultural products were being loaded on trucks, trucked through Utah and taken to the port of Long Beach in LA. And so there was certainly the product there. There were goods there. The Union Pacific has a train that goes from Denver to Seattle or to those northeast or northwest seaports. And it was full of empty containers. So there was capacity passing right past all of these, where the goods would be, were located. But there was really no way to get on and off that rail. And so a private company decided that, hey, we're going to build the infrastructure required to access those empty containers, load them, and put them back on the rail. And as they did that, you know, it kept all those trucks from coming to Utah that would have come through the state on their way to California, because our neighboring state doesn't have any rail loadouts to Southern California. So that's just an example. There's other times when we get, you know, capacity and infrastructure. And when that happens and we don't have the goods, you're going to find that, you know, there's really a lack of growth in the area. You're going to have workforce issues. And really, there's going to be no private investment. And then at times you're going to end up in a situation where we have infrastructure and we have goods, and you're going to see, I think that's one of the things that we, and you don't have capacity. I think that's something we saw when we watched the supply chain collapse over the last few years, is that there just wasn't capacity to move the volume of goods that were coming in and out. And we all know.
Yeah, it's a little bit closer to your mouth.
Okay. And so you're going to see, when that happens, when there's no capacity or the capacity is very restricted, prices are going to go up, companies are going to have increased overhead, and you're going to see a collapse of my supply chains. And so, and there's other examples of this as well. I think, you know, Bill, when we talked about cargo, you had your consultants come in and do that study, and they came back that over 90% of the air cargo is trucked out of the state. And to get on a plane in LA or Denver or someplace else. And, you know, we have this beautiful airport. We've got the infrastructure. We clearly have the goods. But as we've discovered, really, to be able to put palletized freight onto airplanes, it needs to go on wide body planes, and we just don't have access to that, or on dedicated freighters, right? So that's an area where there's a lack of capacity. So as the inland port, we've been given a lot of tools, and the goal is, as we find these areas where there's a lack, is to be able to use the tools that the inland port has to help create and bring in or attract the capacity, the goods, or the infrastructure to be able to create this logistics sweet spot. So as, you know, I think everybody's talked about a lot of the tools in the past. There's obviously investment. There's the infrastructure bank. There's public-private partnerships, relationships, policy, a lot of those things that can impact the various components that are required to create a good logistics play. And so that's really the direction that we are looking at all of the project areas that we have, and just how do, what do we have now, and what is required, and what tools can we deploy to be able to bring in what's lacking. Just really quickly, you know, there are some risks that we potentially know of, or the, you know, or concerns that as we're digging into this, and this is very, very early stages. So I marked it all as a draft because it's very much fluid and changing right now. But I just wanted to make sure that we kind of brought everybody up to speed with what we're thinking, where we're going. So just on the infrastructure side, you know, we really need to understand what infrastructure exists currently, what infrastructures might be lacking in various places throughout the state, and where we can make investment to actually make improvement. Around capacity, I think, you know, some of our risks are the relationships with our transportation providers, obviously the air freighter capacities and other risks, shortage of shipping containers in the marketplace. I can talk to a lot of businesses trying to access containers is difficult for ocean shipping, for export, and, you know, federal policy. This is an area that's very much regulated, and so federal policy plays a big impact on capacity. And then around the goods, right? Do we have a clear recruiting strategy in our various project areas? Do the businesses, partners, and communities understand the benefits of having a project area and being located in one? And then understanding really what these manufacturers are looking at from a cost perspective when it comes to their transportation, their all-in cost, and to be located in our state and be competitive. And so these are just some of the risks that I kind of foresee that we need to be looking through and examining. And so that's pretty much what I got.
Alan, do you mind if I add just a couple of comments on that as well? I can speak loud too.
So some are saying they couldn't hear from the little owl. So maybe when someone comments on the...
No, it's going to cost feedback with the
I would think it would.
The microphone for the owl is right on the...
So how should we do it?
So we really can't use it, is what I'm saying. And can I apologize for that, but it's just going to cost feedback for people online trying to listen.
Okay.
Did we get feedback while Alan was talking?
We wouldn't know here in the room.
No, at least on my end, I'm not sure who's connected via the owl, but on my end,
okay.
Everything was
fine. We can't amplify the signal coming from the owl itself.
Okay. Miles, no feedback. You can hear me okay?
Yep, hear you loud and clear.
Okay.
So just to add a little bit of color to what Alan's talking about here, we have contracted with CPCS, and I want to put into actual kind of practice how this is going to practical application, how this is going to play out. And Alan did a great job covering this. As we look at a project area, let's just throw out something like the Northwest Quadrant. As we look at how we really optimize what it is that we do logistically in the Northwest Quadrant, we have now a really good partner in CPCS, WSP. I see Shannon and Brett and a few others here. We feel like we've got a really good partner to help us better understand exactly what we can do to optimize cargo flow and really help to create a sense of advantage for shippers that are looking to locate into this area. Now, as we do that, the question is, and we get this a lot, you know, where are your plans to build a port in the Northwest Quadrant? Well, first, the idea of a port is very fluid and it changes from person to person. So what we want to do is, again, with our contractor and in a very public way, start to design out what the actual logistics plan will be for the Northwest Quadrant. It may not be that we invest $1 billion at once into infrastructure, but that we start making some key infrastructure investments to try and build towards what could be a significant advantage. I also want to highlight that as we're looking at this, Alan said this really well, but we're looking at how do we really use this to create economic value that will create economic multipliers. That's not distribution centers. That's advanced manufacturing. That's other types of industries that create life-sustaining jobs. So that's the target. That's what we're going for. So as we are looking at our opportunities, we're working with the vendor. In all of these areas, we're going to be very transparent in terms of reaching out, getting feedback from the public. I could see us doing town halls. I also want to compliment CPCS. They've done some significant, and WSP, they've done some significant work to build up for this. I'm anticipating that our next meeting, we'll be able to lay out exactly what our anticipation is, how we will be engaging the public in that process, and exactly what it is that we're aiming for in terms of our investments into logistics infrastructure into the Northwest Quadrant, but then also into Beaver County, Juab County. I would note, it's interesting, we've already got some really good facilities, loading facilities in some of these counties. So how do we better utilize some of the existing infrastructure as well? All of that kind of plays into that, but we want to make sure that all of these areas have a very good logistics strategy to help give us guidance as we move forward.
Great. Thank you, Ben, for that. Now it's the presentation. Senator Stevenson, Bill, Ryan, I joined us online. Any questions or comments from the board?
No, I'm good.
Learning. Good. And I will note, again, Bill, we've been looking forward to getting you involved for a long time, but the timing of Bill now formally joining the board, and we'll get him sworn in here at some point before too long, lines up really well with this focus on the Northwest Quadrant and that project area that Ben was just describing. We need to get great input from everybody across a range of different stakeholders as we go to work to try to figure out the how to, as an entity, an inland port, working with a lot of other partners that have property and zoning and other responsibilities in that area, but how can we convene and bring in great expertise to figure out how to shape the arc or bend the arc of development in a way that leads to generational impact for everybody involved. And so, Bill, we look forward to your role in that process. Forward with the agenda. We'll now go to Chief Compliance Officer Amy Brown Coffin for discussion on amendments to a board policy.
Great. Thank you, Miles. Somebody didn't use that, or I'm fine to project it.
Not that way.
Well done, Steve.
There you go. Everyone's eardrums.
Mm-hmm. So, I was just wondering if we could ask Mr. Hansen to speak up under the conditions. Could he speak up when he's speaking?
Yeah, I'll put the microphone.
And also, when you make reference to the entities with all the abbreviations, would you mind clarifying who those entities are?
Sure.
I apologize for the interruption.
Go ahead.
So we received some feedback from the Fort Finance Review Commission around our AIB policy. That's the Authority Infrastructure Bank policy. That is a board group policy back in April that we put into place. And around this feedback, they had asked about just enhancing the policy with more details around the purpose of the law plan, reporting statutory code, eligible activities, details around law instruction and security policies. Oh, I'm too loud, aren't I? Because I talked too long. Repayment terms, collection policies, modifications of loan terms, and other processes and controls for defaults and write-offs, as well as program accountability. So what we have done and what the board has in front of them are enhancements around that, and specifically what we have added are corollary sections. We've added this main security, where we've talked about all of those four areas. It's important to note that the contracts for, the loan contracts are run by State Finance. So we are, they have templates created. We're using those collection terms and repayment terms. Each loan will have different repayment terms. There's not a standardization. We have a robust process in place as, interested applicants, would like to inquire, as well as an internal process, through our CFO sitting next to me, as far as the review of collateral. We've added enhancements right from those, templates for the loan, documents, into that section. And then with program accountability, we just outlined specifically the roles and and what they're doing throughout the loan process. And you can see that in the table on the last, or second to last page. It does go through a thorough review process as well as approval process. So we put in the details around that, of course, going from a loan approval committee recommendation to our UIBA board approval, then to the executive appropriations committee approval, and then following that with a loan agreement issued by the Division of State Finance, as well as some reporting to the respective State Finance Review Commissions and EAC. We have just some language around additional controls and quality assurance to make sure we have independent checks for due diligence. I'm going to also send this back for just any final feedback from the State Finance Review Commission to see if this satisfies, and then be seeking board approval at our next board meeting. So I will pause here for any questions from the board.
Great. Thank you, Amy. Any questions or comments from the board? Okay. Seeing none, well, Amy, I appreciate you presenting that, and we can go ahead, and we look forward to getting any input from the public or others and voting on that in a future meeting. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to a presentation from Danny Stewart, our new Associate Vice President of Regional Project Area Development. He will discuss a draft project area plan for Beaver County. Danny will introduce a guest from Beaver County who will also participate in the presentation. So, Danny, welcome aboard the Inlandport team, and we'll go ahead and turn the time over to you, and you can go ahead and manage the others that will participate in the presentation along with you.
Thank you, Chairman Hansen. We're going to get situated here. All right, you set?
Yep.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chairman Hansen, honorable members of the board. I'm Danny Stewart, Associate Vice President for the Yucatan Inland Port Authority now for a week, and very excited to be here. And we're excited to present the project area plan and budget for the Mineral Mountains Inland Port Project Area to be located in Beaver County. You will find the project area plan and budget draft included in your board meeting materials. This document was also included in the materials sent in advance of the meeting. It was posted on the public meeting notice website and the public or the Port Authority website, inlandportauthority.utah.gov. This is the first presentation of this document and is only informational. We anticipate no board action being taken on this item in today's meeting. The project area plan and budget includes detailed information regarding the logistical, economic, and environmental considerations of the project area. As an overview, the Mineral Mountains Inland Port will include multiple non-contiguous, regionally vital areas in Beaver County. Collectively, these areas will represent a region of economic significance in Southwest Utah, supporting and driving advancement and efficiencies in the logistical capabilities of the region, as well as promoting responsible economic growth and prosperity. In addition to UIPA's current and planned project areas, the Mineral Mountains Inland Port adds a critical piece to the puzzle in meeting the Utah Inland Port Authority's statutory mission to support and maximize long-term economic benefits to the state of Utah. By statute, Port Authority project areas must meet the following criteria. There is a need to effectuate a public purpose. There is a public benefit to the proposed development project. It is economically sound and feasible to adopt and carry out the project area plan, and carrying out the project area plan promotes the statutory goals and objectives of Utah Code 1158203. Additionally, each participating governmental body must invite the Utah Inland Port Authority through resolution to create a project area. The Beaver County Commission passed a resolution requesting the creation of the project area. On April 18th of this year, Milford City passed their resolution on May 16th, 2023, and Beaver City passed theirs on August 29th, 2023. Each of these resolutions can be found in the draft plan and budget under Appendix C. Presenting with me today to speak about public purposes and benefit from the Mineral Mountains Inland Port will be County Commissioner Tammy Pearson. Following Commissioner Pearson, we will hear from Jen Wakeland, Beaver County Strategic Development Director, who will address regional assets and industries of focus for the project area. I'll now turn the time over to Commissioner Pearson.
Thanks, Danny. Okay, so ready or not, here we come. Beaver County has been on board since day one with the announcement of Inland Port. We've had the same similar vision in our area. We've been working towards this for a long time. Our history is a long cultural history. Our roots are deep in our county, and unfortunately, similar to other rural counties, and Senator Stevenson, many of you have heard this from our counties, that our biggest export is our children. And so we're working on, you know, ways and means of keeping infrastructure built that is going to bring an economic driver to our counties that'll keep our kids at home. We're a resilient bunch of hicks that, you know, we want to stay home. We want to keep our homes and our families here in Beaver County. And so I'm not much of a public speaker. I'm a lot better at cussing and swearing.
You fit into the Inland Port meetings just fine then.
Other than I'm a huge supporter. We love Beaver County, and we want to welcome Inland Port, you know, to our area. We've got three communities that are very supportive: Milford, Beaver, and Minersville. We have the infrastructure that's there, and I apologize because I've had a cold, so I don't have much of a voice, but we welcome you guys, and I'm going to leave it at that.
Thank you, Commissioner Pearson. I prepared a few remarks. Let me give you a little bit of history about Beaver County for those of us are in the room that or online that may not know too much about Beaver County and anything other than just the creamery and a great spot to stop for a snack on your way. Located in a very rural region of the state, Beaver County holds unique assets as a logistically connected hub. Situated at the halfway point between Salt Lake City, Utah and Las Vegas, Nevada, we are the crossroads for interstate and highway systems, as well as two municipal airports, of which one has cargo capacity. All of these logistical resources are relatively new in comparison to the rail lines that have been in our county since the late 1800s. Each of these assets connect Beaver County nationally, as well as globally positioning our county to connect with emerging industry while maintaining the quality of life and culture we have developed over decades of boom and bust economic growth, as Commissioner Pearson noted. This plan presents several zones within our county that are connected to a Union Pacific crew change location with nexus to Interstate 15 and 70, as well as Highway 21. In addition to these roads, there exists rail with several spurs and a loop track, the quality of which is unparalleled in our region. Like many other port project areas, we have our sights set on the future of ports, as this project represents a relationship with Utah Inland Port Authority for the next 25 years. Two municipal airports anchor the easternmost and westernmost zones. Designed in the 1950s for cargo capacity flights, Milford's Municipal Airport isn't built to that specification, but has in hand the plans to execute that expansion. This will allow for rail, truck, and air continuity to be a realized asset over the duration of this Inland Port project. Our history as a county is one of resilience. We have survived centuries of boom and bust economics, both of prosperity and turmoil. We have seen the rise of mining, agriculture, and rail. We've also seen their decline. And yet here we are, sitting in front of you today, in front of your board, with a proposal at hand, a proposal that we know will be a blessing in the lives of our residents, a proposal that bets on the good established there and invests on the infrastructure we have already built. We want to continue to invest in agriculture as our heritage is grounded in it. We want to expand out to include and recruit ag tech-based industries. Additionally, mining has long held a tradition in our county. Our continued interest in the resources beneath our feet can be paired with advanced manufacturing and aerospace technology fields. Having 5 renewable energy sources already established in our county for the last several decades, we hope to continue to be a leader in innovation within the renewable energy industry. All of this is not without acknowledging the research and development, as well as warehousing and distribution that will be necessary complements to each of these fields. As this plan has been prepared, thoughtful consideration has been given to industry, growth, and anticipated developments. It honors our heritage and speaks to our logistical strengths. Each zone utilizes the individual community strengths to work independently, but contribute and to function as a larger part of the project as a whole. In short, Beaver County is uniquely situated to continue supporting the existing economy and allows for agility to expand into emerging and diverse industries. Thank you.
Amen.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Jan. Appreciate your overview and the views from the local community and the local perspective considering this project area. What I'd like to do now is summarize how this aligns with our statute for the Inland Port Strategy under 1158-203, policies and objectives as they align with local goals. The statute lists 20 policies and objectives of the authority, which include items such as maximizing long-term economic benefits to the area, the region, and the state, facilitating the transportation of goods, increasing trade and global commerce in the region, and maximizing the creation of high-quality jobs in the Beaver County area. The Mineral Mountain Project Area Plan accomplishes items A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, Q, and R from the list of policies and objectives of the Utah Inland Port Authority. You can see that the community and the authority are well aligned in the goals of the project area. This is informational only. This project area will be presented again at the board's October 4th meeting in Milford City for your consideration. And with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Great. Thank you, Danny, and everybody for that presentation and all the work and preparation that goes into that. First, I'll turn to the board for questions or comments.
I have no questions or comments.
Yeah, same.
Okay. One quick question. As we look at this, what do you see as the biggest risks involved with this project area, things that we should have on our radar to plan to mitigate or to avoid?
Yeah, the question was asked, what do we see as the biggest risks or maybe hurdles, I think is a better way of asking that question, for the development of our project area? Very truthfully, as a rural county, you're always concerned about having too many jobs and not enough workforce. So recruitment is key. As we start to look at those industries that we'd like to bring to the area, we're thoughtful about the education that our children are receiving. We're very lucky to have a school superintendent who has actually required coding and computer programming as part of traditional K-12 education. So we've already kind of curbed some of that by upfront by educating our kids so that they can have some of that knowledge before they get into the workforce. Other key things that I see that will help us with that will be partnerships with the local universities to create tracks for those who want to go on to college. Very clearly, not every child wants to attend college. Some children just love where they live and want to have a good, stable job. And so we want to make sure that there's those available as well. So as we start to look at recruitment, we really worry about the people that we can put into those positions and the moves that we can make to prepare the youth as they move forward each year and how we can partner with schools and universities to address those needs.
Great. Thank you. Really good feedback. I appreciate that. Okay.
Mr. Chair, could I add something for just a second?
Yeah, absolutely, please.
So you asked a question about risk. And, you know, as we've developed in the report process over the past several years, I've had opportunity to lead in the legislative process to do that. But I think the risk that we recognized up front was the financial risk. And so we as a state took on the opportunity to go in and create better looks at the finances of all the ports. And we put together the committee, we run it through, we put the right committee, the right people together. And the state, we put a lot of money into this. We put literally hundreds of millions of dollars, not only into the inland port process, but the entire land use authority process that we go through as a state. And as we look at the outcomes that we are getting from these organizations, they're tremendous. The Military Installation Authority has been in existence now since 2008, and it's creating billion-dollar projects across our state that are adding to the economy and the general welfare of the citizen of Utah. So we put together a process the last 2 years that will audit and take care of this financial process that takes it all the way to the executive finance in the state legislature. We'll have opportunity to look at every project and make sure that they are that there's a payoff there for the citizen of the state of Utah. That's the direction we're headed in. But I just wanted to make sure that I think we've assessed the risks that come with this. And do we think every project in every community is going to be successful? We do. And we think we've got the right audit process in looking at those. So with that, I'll turn this time back to you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Stevenson, for that and for your leader, for the comment. It's insightful and it's important for all of us to keep in mind at the structural work that you have led out on and others in the legislature to make sure that we are assessing that financial risk, that we're mitigating that risk, and we're ensuring that as we move forward with projects like this, that we do have that bottom line in mind for the general public. So that's absolutely critical for the long-term success of all public entities, including the Utah Inland Port Authority. Okay, if there are no other questions or comments on the introduction of the Mineral Mountains Inland Port Project Area, let's go ahead and move on and appreciate it, Danny, for all the work that you've done on this. And we'll now go ahead and bring our focus to Juab County. And the reason why we're meeting in Juab County today, the proposed project area here will be known as the Central Utah Agri-Park Inland Port Project Area. The project area plan was introduced to the board at our meeting in Brigham City on August 21st. And Danny, we'll go ahead and look, go back to you to introduce the local guests and to lead us through the discussion of this proposed project area.
Reset. Okay.
Hey, just situating again, getting this group set up. But thank you, Chairman Hansen, members of the board. It's going to be a little bit repetitive because it's important that we mention a few of the things as we hear this second presentation of the Central Utah Agri-Park project area. Again, I'm Danny Stewart with the Inland Port Authority, presenting now the second review of the project area plan and budget for the Central Utah Agri-Park. Now, just to update everyone, there has been a name change to this project area since the first review. The Six County Association of Governments is in the process of a name change of that organization, and the AgriPark stakeholders have elected to change the name to Central Utah AgriPark for this proposed project area. Documentation in the plan and budget has been updated to reflect this change. Again, you will find these project area plan and budget draft materials included in your board meeting materials. This document was also included in the materials sent in advance of the meeting and posted on the public meeting notice site and the Utah Port Authority website, inlandportauthority.utah.gov. The project area plan and budget includes detailed information regarding the logistical, economic, and environmental considerations of the project area. As for the last review, the Central Utah Agripark will include multiple non-contiguous regionally vital areas in Juab County. These areas will represent a region of economic significance for all of Central Utah, supporting and driving advancement and efficiencies in the logistical capabilities of the region, as well as promoting responsible economic growth and prosperity here. In addition to UIPA's current and planned project areas, the Central Utah Agripark adds a critical piece to the puzzle in meeting Utah Inland Port Authority's statutory mission to support and maximize long-term economic benefits for the state of Utah. This next slide, again, is a repeat, but this is important that everyone here understands the statutory requirements of the Port Authority. By statute, the Utah Inland Port Authority project areas must meet the following criteria. They need to effectuate a public purpose, a public benefit to the development project, economically sound and feasible, promotes the statutory goals and objectives of Utah Code 1158-203, and additionally, each participating governmental body must invite the Utah Inland Port Authority through resolution to create the project area. The Juab County Commission passed this resolution requesting the creation of the project area on May 8th of 2023. This resolution can be found in the draft plan and budget in Appendix C. Happy now to introduce the speakers who are presenting with me. First of all, presenting from the Utah Port Authority will be Associate Vice President Stephen Smith and Manager of Business Development and Project Areas, Lynn Meyer. And we will also hear from local representatives, Director of Economic Development for the Six County Association of Governments, Jenna Draper, and Wade Eliason, Acting President of Farm Bureau. And to start with the presentation of the public purpose and the need for this project area, is Juab County Commissioner Clinton Painter.
Chairman Hansen, Director Hart, board members, thank you for the opportunity to be here and present today. Central Utah Agripark was born out of necessity. During the COVID-19 pandemic, we discovered our food security was an issue, as Mr. Evans had previously stated. You went to your local markets, and those necessity items like fruits, vegetables, and proteins were limited, or in some cases, non-existent. Due to their scarcity, food prices were artificially inflated, especially as our meat production is controlled by four main conglomerates. The Central Utah Agripark is a park focused on agriculture. It will be open to businesses in agriculture and agricultural adjacent business fields. Some of these businesses could be fruit, vegetable processing, animal processing, hay cubing and compacting, wool processing facilities, and agritech such as the fodder business. The idea behind the Agripark will be to have a shovel-ready location for these businesses. So if a new business were wanting to come into Juab County or in the area, they would meet the planning and they could potentially meet the planning and zoning on Monday. And if all the boxes check, they could legitimately have a building permit by the end of the week. We want to have all the infrastructure in place, water, roads, power, gas. So they'll be readily available for these businesses. In short, we want to save the family farm, which is so important to rural Utah. This is what our state was built upon. And we want to be able to provide avenues where they can continue their productions right here in Utah. They don't have to send their cattle out of state for processing and then come back again to be sold, adding additional expense. Additionally, currently there is not a processing facility in the state of Utah for wool, so we're hoping that maybe wool processing will come here as well. The Agripark is centrally located and has the ability to bolster local processing in Utah. The Agripark has been a collaborative effort between six independent counties. All six of these counties, realizing these pioneering initiatives, assigned MOUs to participate and together have donated over $1 million of their own funds to finance the infrastructure and assessment plans. This unprecedented action shows a commitment to not just preserving the family farm, but is an opportunity for growth and prosperity to agriculture in Utah. It is believed that this project will be a benefit to not only Juab County, the state of Utah, and potentially the Intermountain West. The partnership with key initiatives such as the Utah Inland Port Authority, the Governor's Office of Economic Development, and the Utah Department of Agriculture and Food has played a pivotal role in guiding and supporting the Agripark project. highlighting the importance of intergovernmental cooperation in achieving a transformative endeavor. By effectuating the public purpose of the agri-park, Utah will take a significant step forward in securing its agricultural future, promoting economic growth, and ensuring food security for generations to come.
Thank you. Welcome us back, right? Here we are. We did note all of this in our first presentation on August 21st up in Box Elder, but I'm very happy to refresh your memory about this project area, and as it is a key component to providing a statewide link for supply and demand. This is not just because I-15 is the central and most prominent highway, but it holds an incredible opportunity for the future of how we grow as a state and will alter the way that we move goods and strive to stay ahead of the national and worldwide trends that we already see happening. When you look at the overview of this area, you can see it on the slide, you'll notice it is rather undeveloped. But if you read these estimated projections that are found in the plan and budget document, the numbers are staggering for expected growth in population, employment, manufacturing, agriculture, and construction. With the implementation of this project area, and we feel this is really important, it should be noted that significant planning and forethought will be leading all of that, rather than leaving it undefined with little direction or oversight. There are five rail-served sites in the project area: Central Utah Grain, Azomite Minerals, Canyon Fuel Company, Redmond Minerals, and John Cooney & Sons Incorporated. Ultimately, the AgriPark will promote and encourage development and uses that are compatible and complementary to the existing infrastructure, and it will drive the benefits to this vital region in Utah. With us today, as noted, is Jenna Draper from Six County AOG, and she will provide some additional insights into the benefits that will be achieved for the community and the producers in the area.
Thank you. So roughly about 3 years ago, I was hired at Six County to help with economic development across the region. Part of that was resilience and recovery after the COVID-19 pandemic. We got our group together of other economic development professionals and representatives through each of the counties and went through several of our key industries trying to decide how we could best help each of the counties. If we could have one major focus that would elevate everyone and get everyone on board together. Our biggest goal was the collaboration of these six counties, which we have achieved with this project. It came down to agriculture, and it came down to wanting our children to stay here and continue the family farms. So we got together a bunch of producers and different people from across the region to decide how best to do this. We explored several different areas. We explored financing. We explored kind of helping them with marketing, helping them with the distribution, helping them with in any area. And the thing that the producers kept coming back to is, if we could reduce our overhead, we could reduce our freight costs, we could reduce our carbon footprint, it would be better for the environment, it would be better for our bottom line. And we had all of these producers looking at their financials saying, we could actually get these operations to continue to pencil for several generations if we could reduce the cost of getting our products processed. We ended up deciding to go with the model of the Tahoe Regional Industrial Park. They have, as Commissioner Painter alluded to, they have a model where someone can go in and say, I would like to put in a battery manufacturing or some other sort of industry. And they say, great, here's your land. How much is it going to cost? What do you need? And as long as your impact fee check clears, you guys can start building on Friday. That's the idea. Right now, every agricultural processing requires a continued conditional use permit. And so we're trying to take down all of those barriers. We're trying to reduce all of the red tape for these processors that would like to come into the area. We have potatoes that used to be grown in Paiute County that are just beautiful. They're better than any potato that comes out of Idaho. But those producers cannot get those products to market. They grow mushrooms down there in their turkey barns. Their turkey barns are sitting empty because of the producers that have had a stronghold on them. The processors that have had a stronghold on those producers that are paying them maybe 70 cents for each of their birds. And so their turkey barns sit empty. They've explored growing mushrooms. They've explored doing other things with those. And the issue keeps coming back to the processing. They cannot get any of their products anywhere fast enough for them to be processed and sent to market in enough time before they spoil. So this centrally located area will allow all of the producers in Paiute County, will allow all of the producers in Wayne County, will allow everybody in the six-county region to get their products processed and put on a rail car. Our partnership with the Inland Port is going to allow them to open up a global market, which is something that they have never even dreamed that could be a possibility for our family farms here. So as we come to the conclusion of, you know, the last 3 years, really what we're trying to build here is a legacy. We're trying to continue those family farms that have been scraping by for generations. We're trying to get our kids to go back and go to school and come up with the different new technologies and new things that they can then bring back. I recently helped, well, not recently, Snow College has gotten a grant to build an innovative ag center. And that is going to be a large component of partnership with this area, because Snow can now train their children and can now bring the latest technologies and get all of these kids ready to then come back and take over their family farms. And then we will allow them to have a market to continue growing and selling for generations to come.
Thank you, Jenna. Really appreciate that. And so excited to be back here talking about this again. This has been just one of the coolest projects to be involved with. And one of the great things about having an Inland Port project area is that we get to help with the recruiting and incentives for the businesses in the project area. And in this one, I think it's particularly poignant that we have a part in that. As we covered in the draft review in Box Elder, recruiting focus and incentives in the Central Utah Agri Park will be directly aligned to those agricultural industries, as well as any supporting industries that fall within kind of that realm. These have been determined in conjunction with county leadership and the 6-County Association of Governments. So as a reminder, we've got protein and other agricultural processing, agricultural technology, cold storage, value-added beef processing, agriculture implements and tools, among, you know, all of those things in those general areas is what we're looking at. Incentives will be aligned and targeted to those industries, which will be highly valuable, again, in achieving the AgriPark's long-term mission, not only for the region, but for the whole state. Note that the county has also requested that the businesses that we look at for incentives, they utilize rail heavily, and they provide for highly skilled employment opportunities. Those will receive preference in that consideration. So with that said, I'd like to turn the time over to Wade Eliason to provide a little bit more perspective from producers in the region and the economic benefits of the Central Utah Agri Park. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for allowing us to take this time to present this to you this day. As I first started hearing about the Agri Park 3 years ago, I wasn't really involved. I was invited to a couple meetings to discuss the Agri Park, and time would pass by. And I think it must be done. It must be over. It just must be one of them latest brainstorms, and it hasn't gained any traction. And I'd run into someone and they'd say, yeah, it's making progress. Great. I like it. So I have been involved a little bit, but not too much, but it's a real opportunity for the future of not only the 6 counties. As I looked up what percentage of agriculture the 6 counties represent, it's about 30% of Utah agriculture that the 6 counties represent. And as this project's gone forward, it's had to have six counties come together and come up with an idea of where this could be located. So that right there has already showed us that the group of people can come together and decide on the good for all, not just for one individual. So this is great that we're to this point for the opportunity to move this AgriPark together. I've always thought that's a weird name. Are we going to go there and play, or what are we going to do? But I get the picture. It's starting to come in a little bit. As we think about what I've sat here and listened to today, there's been a lot of economic drive behind all of this. And if we think about the state of Utah was built on economics, and that economics was agriculture in the state of Utah. It built the state of Utah. And if I thought the more things change, the more they remain the same. If we look back years ago, they built a lot of infrastructure for our food supply in the state of Utah. all that infrastructure's, it's old. The reason that infrastructure is important to us, the reason this ag park's important to us, is because it's our food source. As we learned 3 years ago, that's an issue. Our food source is an issue. And we need some infrastructure to be able to produce our ag product. And you talk about a multiplier, economical multiplier. We know without doing much study that agriculture is an economic multiplier. You can call it a 7 times, you can call it an 8 times, you take your pick. I think you'll be hard pressed to find a better economic multiplier than agriculture. So with having said that, that gives the future of these multi-generational farms that have been in families for multiple generations a hope for the future. They have hopes. They get up every morning. They have hopes. They have desires. They love what they're doing. But this just gives them a little more hope, a little more desire to try to do what needs to be done for that economic drive to stay strong in each one of these counties, and not only these counties, in the state of Utah, because this will affect all of Utah economy. And it's so important to the local ag community and our producers. So thank you.
Thank you, Wade. Thanks everyone who has presented about this project area. Just to summarize, the local goals that you've heard expressed today, they align very, very well with the statute for the Inland Port Strategy under 1158-203 policies and objectives. You can see that this project area very well supports and promotes land uses that generate economic development, including rural economic development and agriculture. It also establishes a project of regional significance in central Utah that to have 6 counties participating and multiple entities all working toward the same goal is a testament of how important this is in the state. As mentioned earlier, the statute lists 20 policies and objectives of the Utah Inland Port Authority that include promoting the development of facilities that help connect local businesses to national and international markets and encouraging development that is compatible or complementary to current uses. This exemplary regional collaboration in the Central Utah Project Area, this agri-park, is an ideal example of how the inland port can be an integral part of coordinated regional development. In short, the Central Utah Agri-Park accomplishes the majority of statutory goals. You can go through the alphabet again if you'd like, but
I'd love to hear it.
Okay, we're going to say that this one touches on those listed as A, B, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, and R in statute. With this, members of the board, the staff of the Utah Inland Port Authority formally requests your consideration in passing the resolution creating the Central Utah Agri-Park as a Utah Inland Port Project Area. We'll take any final questions at this time.
Great. Thank you very much for those presentations.
Jerry, hey, I don't ask a lot of questions sometimes because as we looked at this, the basics of this last legislative session, a lot of times this is amazing review for me, but I've already looked at it. Because of the finance implications that are tied to it, I've already had a chance to look at it there also. So that's the reason I kind of, and you know me, I'm not very, very noisy anyway, so.
Well, Senator Stevenson, you created the framework, and so you know this thing inside and out. And you were up there in Brigham City with us last month when we had this initial presentation. Ryan or Bill, any questions or comments from you?
Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
I was just going to comment that I don't know that I'm supportive of this if I can't be there in person to celebrate, because I think it's such a big deal to the state. And so you might have to convince me, but really excited about this. Thank you.
Great.
Can we also mention, Mr. Chair, that GOEO, Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity, has been a really key partner in this. So thank you to Ryan and his team.
for all their efforts to help put this structure, in addition to the state legislature and a lot of other people who've worked on this.
Right. Thank you, Ben, for that. As always, appreciate everything that GoYo is doing on a lot of issues. So I just say I'm going to protest it until the next time that Ryan and I can be in the same room together. It's been too long. So with that, thank you, Danny, and everybody for that participation and really for all the work. I know that today in that presentation, what we saw in Brigham City is just the tip of the iceberg. All the time and energy that we have to figuring out how the MM4 can be a partner with these local entities on an exciting project that will benefit the local communities and through that, the entire state. So we will now go into the general public comment portion of the meeting. Once we begin, we will no longer accept any additional public comment cards. Upon recognition by the chair, the speaker shall approach the microphone to give their comment. All comments shall be directed to me. No person addressing the authority shall be allowed to comment more than once during the comment period. Once your name is announced, you will have 2 minutes each. In order to support a respectful meeting, items that disrupt the meeting, intimidate other participants, or cause safety concerns are not allowed and will not be tolerated. And we'll go ahead and conclude the public comment portion of the meeting at 3:30. And if we have a few extra minutes, we may just go a little bit longer because we are running just a few minutes behind schedule. And again, a reminder for anybody who wants to but is not able to comment publicly today, please reach out to us at inlandportauthority.utah.gov. Those written comments are very valuable, and we appreciate them. So with that, Larry, if I may ask, or Ben, since I'm not in the room, if you could read off the names as it will do the commenting and keep time, that would be very beneficial.
That works, Mr. Chair. We will have Larry keep time if that's okay. The names that we have in order there received are Marvin Kennison, Jeremy Hallows, Courtney Henley, and Troy Bunlisbacher. Did I get that right? Okay, so those are the four people who are interested in making public comments. So if we want to start with Marvin Kennison.
Right. I wasn't going to do this, but I decided maybe I would at the last minute. So I'm Marvin Kennison. I'm a Juab County Commissioner. I'm also a farmer. I've lived in this valley since 1979. I moved from Utah Valley. I've been involved in farming all my life. And the value and benefit I see in the agri-park is it seems like there's an assault on farms now. We're seeing shrinking farm ground and things. And the only way I see that we can remedy that is to make it to where farmers can make a living. Their kids aren't going to want to come back to the farm and things unless they can make a living. And that's been the case, you know. Sometimes we're tied to co-ops and things with milk production and things. If we have more competition in those areas, you know, and you know, we used to have some flour mills and things around. We don't have those things around now. And so that, like they said earlier, you know, the cost of transportation eats up a lot of the profit and things. And so if we can bring some of those things back, and then there'd be some attractiveness for our kids to stay around and people to continue farming. And that's the only way we're going to keep, I think, a lot of this farm ground from being developed for other things. Thank you.
Great. Mark, I commented for your public service. We really appreciate it. Okay, Ben, I think you mentioned Jeremy is up next.
Yes. Welcome, Jeremy.
Thanks for having us, guys. I'm excited to be here and been excited to be a part of a couple of these meetings now. But I work for a company called Bailey Farms down here in central Utah, headquartered down here. And we also have two plants that are actually just either side of where this agri-park may be located here in Juab County. So it's pretty strategic for us in terms of the ability to be able to ship our product, which really is the bottleneck of everything we do, as well as the bottleneck for our growth. We employ probably right near 100 people in the state, and and our footprint in terms of other industries we affect, obviously mainly agriculturally, but also logistically, expands far beyond that in terms of job creation. And for the people here that you've heard a lot of comments today that have hinged around farmers and families' desires to keep family farms and have generational, continuation of the family business. And so this is something that's passionate to us, and we have an ability to directly impact that. And these types of facilities we feel will be a huge benefit for our ability to be able to grow and further expand options for the people that do live here and for the people that do want to have families continually involved on a long-term basis in running family farms. So we just appreciate that, and we're glad to be part of this.
Courtney Henley.
Thank you so much. Hello, everyone. These wonderful people know me pretty well. I drove down from Salt Lake City. My name is Dr. Courtney Henley. I'm on the board of advisors for Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. And I was up in Brigham City. And my advice to Juab County is put on the brakes. The authority was created in Salt Lake City in 2018. And Ben knows it was rough. It was rough until we got this new board. And this is the first I've heard of agriculture. And let me tell you what, my heart bleeds for our farmers. What is wrong with our country that we are not producing more food here and helping our farmers? We're paying some landowners $300,000 a month in Salt Lake. I'd rather just pay it to these farmers that are here and help you guys get the things that you need. So again, I'm saying put on the brakes. If the human health risk assessment has taken 6 years, I would say give it 6 years before you start spending too much money on that authority. Thank you so much, and lovely city that you have here. Beautiful.
Thank you, Courtney. Troy Rindlisbacher?
He stepped out. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do we... we had some people that say they can talk for him. That's okay. Mr. Chair, I think that concludes our public comment.
Okay. Thank you, Ben, for that. Thank you, everybody, for commenting. And if Troy steps back in, I'm sure after the meeting, Ben and it would be more than happy to connect with Troy and hear his comment. Yes, so absolutely. Let's go ahead then. And Ben, let's go ahead and give you a moment here to share your thoughts on the creation of the Central Utah AgriPark Inland Port Project Area and the benefits of UC for Juab County and Central Utah. And then after Ben, we'll pause for any more comments, questions from the board, at which point we'll move into the action portion of the meeting where we will consider some resolutions and vote to take action.
Well, let me just first say, I think when we're talking about, I'm going to try and be heard, I'm sorry. I'm not sure it's going to work real well. Hopefully you can hear me okay. So let me just first say, when we're talking about what the port really is, I think what we're talking about is that link between a lot of different organizations and how we can bring all of that together in one synergized whole to really help empower a region. And I think what we'll see in Beaver County and also what we see here today is exactly emblematic of that. The fact that you've had six counties that are working together with the AOG, with a host county here, with the Utah State Legislature, with the Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity, with the Utah Inland Port Authority, potentially with federal funds, whatever it may be, to work together to really try and capture economic growth through this area, try and create that opportunity to pull, trucks off the road, being able to better use some of the rail facilities here. This is what the port is all about. I know there's a lot of talk of how do we color the port? What is the port? We could spend our time writing op-eds. That's not what we're going to do. We're going to be out helping the people of the state of Utah. And if we're doing the right things, as we saw in Cedar, then I think what we're doing is going to showcase and have its own value. And I think that's exactly what we're trying to push for here, is we're pushing forward a project. And I feel like the port is supporting a project that is really going to help regionally a lot of not only constituents, but we'll have an economic multiplier, not just across the communities, but across generations. That's powerful.
And when we're talking about everybody working together and pulling in the same direction, I'm sorry, this is an awful analogy, but my mind always goes to the end of Finding Nemo when the fishes are being pulled up in the net, if you can imagine that scene. And everyone's like, where are you going, Ben? Let me just explain. So when the fishes are just swimming, it's very easy to pull them all up out of the water. But when all the fishes start swimming together, they're able to counteract the force that's pulling them out of the water. Powerful things happen when people start swimming together. I know we're not talking about a lake here, but I do want to carry forward that analogy. Powerful things start happening when people start swimming together and start working together. That's exactly what we're seeing here. There's a lot of moving parts, but people working together will change lives. It'll change regions. It'll change the economy, and it might even change the future of the state of Utah. That's a powerful opportunity. So to the board, I sum the comments from staff. We highly and enthusiastically recommend for your approval this project area, even though we know some of you may not be here in person. We feel like this is not only the right thing to do, but this will have the generational impact that we're really aiming for with the Port Authority. And we feel like it meets all objectives as they're outlined. So with that, Mr. Chair, we turn it back to you and to the board for your consideration.
Great. Thank you, Ben. Ben and I both have younger kids, and so I'm very empathetic for the fact that we've both watched Finding Nemo and many other Disney movies over and over again. But Ben, I'll have to follow your example and figure out how to apply the movies to work problems while I'm watching them. So with that, board members, any other questions, comments prior to moving forward? Okay, seeing none, we'll now move to the consideration of Resolution 2023-08. Larry, will you please read the resolution into the record?
Resolution 2023-08, a resolution of the Utah Inland Port Authority a resolution of the Utah Inland Port Authority Board adopting the Central Utah AgroPark Inland Port Project Area Plan.
Thank you, Larry. Do I have a motion to adopt Resolution 2023-08?
I would move that we adopt Resolution 2023-08 and adopt the Central Utah AgroPark Inland Port Project.
Great. Thank you, Senator Stevenson. Do I have a second? Looking at you, Ryan Starks.
Second, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Ryan. Larry, will you please conduct the roll call vote?
Jerry Stevenson?
Yes.
Ryan Starks?
Yes.
And Chairman Hansen?
Yes. Okay, resolution passes. Congratulations to everybody who's worked hard to get this going. And we know that passing a resolution just means now the real work begins as we all go out to coordinate together, to work together to make this successful. And so now, before we adjourn, one last item of business. We need to go ahead and approve our minutes from our August 21st, 2023 meeting. And would somebody be so inclined and to move that we adopt those August 21 meeting minutes.
So moved.
Thank you, Ryan. Second.
I would second.
Thank you very much, Jerry. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All right. Motion carries. Okay. Thank you, everybody, for all the work on this meeting, and we'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting.